Welcome to the CineScare Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am the inspiration across the nation. I am Joe Jans.
A.K.A. the National Treasure.
National Treasure. I got upgraded today, though, to inspiration.
Oh, yeah, you are. Yeah. Good. Well, is that an upgrade? National Treasure or inspiration? Would you rather be a National Treasure or an inspiration?
To the nation? I'd rather be an inspiration.
Oh, to the nation. Yeah, I don't think I said you're an inspiration to the nation.
No, I ad-libbed
that. Oh, you added that part. Okay, perfect.
Tried so hard not to say, start singing You're the Inspiration from Chicago right now.
And with us, as always, is the super fan, Mr. Mark Biscotti.
What's up, everybody?
And with us, as well, is film critic from JoeBlow.com. Mr. Jimmy O. James Oster.
I love the way you say that, man. It just makes me feel so welcome.
You are welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. And you are film critic form from JoeBlow.com.
JoeBlow.
Well, here we are again. And Joe, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but it is December right now. And that means we are coming down to the end of 2022. I suppose you're aware of that.
I had no idea. I still thought we were in mid-August.
Ah, no.
Imagine my surprise.
Imagine your surprise. Well, there's no way you thought that because you had a very hectic Halloween. So, I am curious about one thing, Joe. What have you watched recently that is non-theme related?
Oh, I'm still reeling from this one. I watched A Wounded Fawn. Did you ever get around to watching that, Matt?
I did. I watched it Saturday night, I think.
Talk about bizarre art house horror. I will say this. I liked it. I was intrigued. Lots of parts of this movie really fired on a lot of cylinders for me. But even I have my limits. This just got so incredibly bizarre at the end. Like on the verge of Mad God bizarre, which is probably why I really like this. But a very intriguing film. Mm-hmm. It's a film about this statue with three, I guess, sort of pagan gods that are, highly sought after in the art industry. And this gentleman ends up becoming a slave to it and has to sacrifice people to it. And then it sort of turns on him. So if you guys get a chance, it's on Shudder. Like I said, I enjoyed it. Very intriguing. Matt, what did you think about that?
I thought it was good. Yeah, I didn't catch the part of him being a slave to the art piece as much as he was a slave to a certain demon.
Yeah,
I kind of got the impression that he was a serial killer before he came upon that art piece.
I
thought because the first person he kills is the woman who won the bid for it. And I felt like he just took it as a trophy, but he was already a serial killer because he had already killed people at that house. That's the ghosts and everything that were coming back with people he'd already killed. So I don't know, but I liked it. I thought it was definitely, and I love weird movies. I love weird movies. I felt like he was definitely, this movie was inspired by Panos Cosmatos quite a bit, maybe little David Lynch, but I feel like when he went into that area, into the kind of psychedelic side of things, that it wasn't as effective as when it was a little more straightforward, but I still liked it a lot. And I thought, it had that film, grainy film kind of thing. Had a look similar to Mandy. But it was almost like a mixture of Mandy and Fresh. And in a way. I mean, not the storyline of Mandy, but definitely the look of Mandy and some of the eccentricities maybe. Uh-huh. But it definitely I think was sort of a weirder version of Fresh. Fresh is a little more mainstream.
Yeah.
But I like Fresh better as a movie than this one, but I liked it. I thought it was good. And I thought the main girl, can't remember her name now. She was really good. And I thought the guy, he was someone I'd seen. I saw him in a movie. It was a comedy, Scare Me, I think was what it was called. And it was from a play. And he does a lot of stuff. He's an indie actor, and I think he does some directing and writing as well. But I liked it. I thought it was good. Definitely worth checking out. I don't know if it'll wind up. It probably wind up in my top 10, but it was definitely. It would be in the argument for one of those last spots, maybe, I think. So definitely worth checking out. Yeah. In fact, that's the only thing I watched this week that was non-theme related. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, how about you, Jimmy? Did you watch anything non-theme related?
Well, I mean, it's definitely, it fits in the vein for sure, even though it's not necessarily a horror film, but it's super bloody. I have a new favorite Christmas film, guys. Love Violent Night. Love Violent Night. It is insanely funny and entertaining, and it's got this big old heart. It's ridiculous. It's campy. It's cool. The kills are gruesome. It's a blast. I mean, this is a really good flick. It's, you know, Die Hard with Christmas, basically. I mean, literally, you know, Die Hard is, everyone fights over Die Hard being a Christmas movie or whatever.
It is.
This is absolutely.
It is a Christmas.
I agree.
Yeah, but it's not overtly, like, this is Santa Claus, yeah, for God's sake.
This is Santa Claus. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I could start a whole nother podcast of why that's a Christmas
film. It's a Christmas film by far.
Yeah.
Look at the soundtrack alone.
I get what you're saying.
Agreed.
But I get what Jimmy's saying.
Like, this is the Tommy Wirkola is just so good at this. He's good at mixing ultra violent, like he did with Dead Snow 2. He's good at mixing this kind of campy horror, but still making it kind of good and exciting, and you actually give a crap about the characters, even the awful people in this. You're like, I kind of like watching these people. Beverly D'Angelo just chews the scenery, and it's gorgeous. It's fun to watch.
Oh, she's in it?
Highly recommend it. Dude, yes, she's in it. She's kick ass. This is a movie that if you like weird Christmas flicks, oh my God, run out. See Violent Night. That's it. That's all I watched.
That's all you watched that was theme related?
I also watched Empire of Light, you know, the Sam Mendes film, but I don't know if that's necessarily fitting for what we're doing here.
Yeah. All right. How about you? How about you, Mark? Did you watch anything non-theme related?
Yeah, I went to.
You don't have to yell, Mark. You just talk normal. It's all good.
Yes. Sorry. So, I saw The Menu. How's that sound?
That's good. Yes.
Yeah, I went.
That's very good.
I went to the movie theater and saw Menu. It's directed by Mark Mylod.
You know, there's a tone that's in between. Yeah. I went and I saw a bunch of movies and
talking like that.
There is.
We're just worried about the volume more so than the type of stage you're choosing.
The sexy. Tone of voice isn't really what we're talking about.
Well, this film is a little sexy in a way. If you like food, if you're a foodie, it is a kind of a sexy little film. But yeah, it's I went into the movie theater. I guess this is coming out from what Matt said. It's going to be out on Netflix or HBO or Shudder soon at the end of December. Yeah,
I think I saw that it was supposed to be on HBO Max, but I could be completely wrong about that.
I've looked that up like 17 times, and even today I saw a new article about what's new coming to HBO Max this month, and it's nothing. Still not on there. Yeah.
All right.
Well, I highly recommend seeing this in the movie theater. A brief synopsis. A young couple, actors Nicholas Holt and Anna Taylor-Joy, travels to a remote island to eat at an exclusive restaurant where one of the greatest chefs in the world has prepared a lavish menu with some horrific surprises throughout the film. First of all, this film is a satire. It's a satire about class, social commentary, privilege, food, chefs, cooks, It's a satire about foodies who write about restaurants, you know, idiotic Yelpers who write about food that have no business in any sort of a way writing about food. And like, I'm talking to the people who work or just go to Olive Garden and food review their dishes. Like, that's not it, just because you watch the Food Network doesn't mean you know anything about food. It's like, if you go to a finer dining restaurant and you ask for salt and pepper for your food, that means your wife or yourself or your husband over seasons your food constantly and is trying to kill you slowly. So yeah, it's basically takes shots at everyone in the food industry, which is probably why I love this film so much, since I have been. What's so funny? What's so funny? What is it? What is it?
Nothing. Just keep going.
No, keep going.
I think we all enjoyed your little side rant, you know, because I don't think most people listening know that you're involved in the food industry.
Or a food snob.
I'm not a food snob by any means of the sort. I'm not a Yelper. I have worked in the restaurant industry.
You're a yeller.
Hey guys, could you give me a second? I gotta go on Yelp and review Olive Garden right now. The breadsticks were terrible.
Exactly. They're the worst. Oh man, yes, I have been in the food industry, worked in the food industry for over 30 plus years. So I'm very, this is probably why I love this film so much.
I've been eating food for almost 50 years.
This doesn't mean you should be a Yelper and you should write food reviews. Like, I've seen people.
One star.
Yeah, exactly. One star. Because I had to put salt on it. It was bland. That means that you eat processed food way too much and you need to stop.
So what did you think of the movie?
Okay, yeah. like I said, this film is a satire. You know, they make fun of food, chefs, cooks, and Yelpers and whatnot. It's basically takes shots at everyone in the food industry, which is probably.
Don't worry about getting to your point. I'm gonna live forever.
Because probably I love this film so much.
Mark,
what?
You don't have to yell, dude. I'm not like sitting.
I'm not yelling. I'm actually talking.
He's reading.
Go ahead. Did you enjoy the movie? Is it good?
I'm getting to that.
Should I go see it?
I'm getting to that. If you guys stop interrupting.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Nicholas.
Oh, is this your blog? Are you reading your blog?
I'm almost done with it. All right. So, Nicholas Hoult steals the movie effortlessly. He's terrific in this film. Ray Fiennes is of course, so wonderful as the chef. This movie had me laugh like four times out loud. Everybody in the movie theater, there was about like over 20 of us, and everybody was enjoying it. It's not the type of film I think a lot of people think this film is. It goes a different direction. There's a twist to it. The entrees actually...
What's the twist?
The twist... Well, I'm not going to tell you the twist because I'm not spoilers.
He almost said it.
I know.
Don't do it. God damn it, Joe.
Joey. We're the goddamn national treasure, you. I'm not going to tell you the twist, but it has to do with their personal lives, and it's included into the entrees and the course of the meals, and it's a nice twist in that sort. I highly recommend it. It's going to be in my top 10, if not top 5, for absolutely sure on that. Really, really watch it, and yeah, that's the menu. And I have an analogy, a sports analogy I like to, you know, kind of like say about this film. It's a slam dunk.
Oh, perfect. Excellent. Those are my favorite analogies.
From the free throw line. Yeah.
It was an Air Jordan all the way from the free throw line.
Beautiful. 50-yard beautiful. Line.
Yeah.
That's really neat. I like it.
And that's what I watched.
All right. So, this week
You guys, I mean, I'm trying to do it, and you guys, I just hear it snickering.
Here, the transition.
This week. We've transitioned.
It is my pick on the Cinescare Horror Podcast. And Joe, I wonder, I wasn't able to get any Christmas music, but if you could just flop a little Christmas song over this little part here.
Maybe flop a little, it?
Yeah.
You know, oh, wow.
Maybe a little
X-rated.
I could just flop it right out here.
Just flop it right here. I'm thinking it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, something like that or whatever.
Maybe even though this isn't something from Die Hard.
Isn't necessarily our Christmas episode. Sort of like Die Hard in that way. It's set at Christmas, not necessarily a Christmas movie, right? Yeah. But the pick that I there we go.
Yeah, I know. Dun, 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 dun. Argyle.
But I digest.
That was fun. So, thank you for doing that.
Our theme this week is Oh the Christmas Horror Redux, which is it's the sequel to our first Christmas episode a couple years ago that Joe and I did. And so I picked six films that I thought we might want to watch that are all pretty much set around Christmas, except for, well, yeah, they all have at least something in Christmas. The first movie, though, is probably the least Christmas-related of them, even though it starts out at Christmas time. And this one I am talking about is Dario Argento's masterpiece of giallo, Deep Red, from 1975. When the screaming starts and the blood begins to flow, pinch yourself and keep repeating, I'm at the movies, I'm at the movies, I'm at the, that must be the tagline for this movie. A musician witnesses the murder of a famous psychic and then teams up with a feisty reporter to find the killer while evading attempts on their lives by the unseen killer bent on keeping a dark secret buried. So this is the first time I saw this movie, and I have to say something. I really want, and I always really want to love giallos, and I don't know what it is. I just don't tend to love them as much as I want to. And I know a lot of people really are totally into giallos, and I've seen some modern versions of giallos that I loved a lot, such as Knife plus Heart, I think is what that one came out a couple years ago. I loved that movie, and it's a very giallo influenced film. Argento's films, I don't know that I've found one that I really love. And even Suspiria, I like the remake more. That's just, I mean, it's just me. But so I thought this was an interesting film. I didn't love it. But what did you guys think? Joe, I'll start with you this time.
Oh, but Mark's got his hand raised. Yeah, I think Mark wants
to. I will let Mark do it.
All right, I'll do it. I'm like you. I thought it was off to a great start. There's a silhouette of a stabbing right by a Christmas tree within the first like 30 seconds of this, and that's my note. Right. Is off to a great start, and then right after that, cue the funky drums. The music in this film is fantastic. It's definitely a 1970s funk film. And then the rest of it went downhill.
I think the music is by Goblin. Yeah, I love the music in this.
Yeah,
Goblin does almost all of like Argento's, and I'm not other people too. I love the music.
The dialogue really drags me down a lot. Mm-hmm. And I know this is more of a technical thing, but where the audio track had a consistent volume, the dialogue throughout the film seemed to go in and out, and I don't know if that's a dubbing thing or what, but it was really driving me nuts at the beginnings. Like sometimes I couldn't hear somebody talk, the next time it's like I'm standing next to Mark. There's no consistent tones. So this movie could have had about a half an hour, I would say, cut out of it. Like I didn't need to see a 10-minute long arm wrestling scene between the detective and the journalist. just to like prove who's the tougher sex. We know it's women. Get over it.
That's true.
And although there was a funny line in there, as long as I'm drunk, I'm as happy as a lark, which that's true. Huh. You know, yeah. I did. That was good writing. But yeah, I don't know. Some of the weird tropes from the 1970s. If you think somebody's in your house and they're trying to kill you and the phone rings, don't pick it up and say, I don't know who this is, but I need you to help me. Maybe actually ask who it is. I don't know. It's just some of the characters seemed like they purposely wrote themselves as dimwitted. Just some of the decisions that they made didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. I also, where was it? The pianist calls on a reporter to the phone to tell her something, and yet both of them are, it doesn't matter. I didn't feel like the story got moved along very well. Like I said, if they had cut a good 20 minutes, half an hour out of it, I think this movie could have gone better. There's a skull crushing scene towards the end that I did like. Not a huge fan.
Yeah. And you know, there's the requisite blood that you expect in a giallo. I didn't think it was as colorful as most giallos. But it's, you know, I mean, I look on lists of giallos and it's usually right up in the top five, if not number one considered, you know. So I know if giallos are your thing, I think I just have to admit now finally that maybe they're just not my thing. I don't know. Mark, what did you think?
Okay, yeah. So I got to be honest, this is my first giallo film that I've ever watched. So going in, I knew that this director is very well renowned. He's supposed to be a very big, huge influencer. So this was my first time going in cold. I was a little excited about it. I was like, all right, let's see what this guy's all about. I was absolutely on the same page with Joe at the beginning with the stabbing with the old man, or, you know, that was great. But when this film like moved along, I hated this music. It just didn't fit with what was going on in the film, in my opinion. The acting was stilted. Dialogue was medium par at best. But I was noticing things throughout this film. There were some great shots in this film, just with the lead actor and his curly alcoholic friend, where they're like set apart between this statue, and he's like calling out, it's like, hey, you know, and they're just talking. That was a great shot. There were so many great shots. You know, throughout the whole film.
And good, interesting camera movement too.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of like there was some Hitchcock even camera angles I was looking at. I was really enjoying that.
Giallo. I think Giallo tends to be very Hitchcock influenced.
Oh, okay.
Yes, very much.
Huh? All right.
Yeah, very much.
Okay.
So.
Well, then that makes sense. The reporter, I guess, is Giallo's wife, if I'm not mistaken. But her acting was
Argento's wife.
Argento's wife, and she was okay. The lead actor was subpar at best. He kind of remind me of I'm trying to think, like a Martin Sheen kind of thing. I don't know. That's what he kind of like reminded me of. But Joe's right. I didn't need to see a 4-minute scene of him climbing down a building with this weird, you know, 70s, you know, music happening. And, you know, I don't know. There was a lot of things. If they compressed this movie down and edited it a little bit better, the editing was off, especially with the music. But there were scenes that I was laughing out loud when he's on the phone next to this guy, next to an espresso machine, and the steam's going off, and she's in this reporter's room, and it's so loud they can't understand each other. I love that scene.
I didn't know why that scene still had to be in the film.
Exactly. But all in all, I love the color of the blood that they used. It was like pinkish hue kind of thing. That was kind of fun.
That's a giallo trope.
Is it? Yeah. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
very bright reds, very bright blood mm-hmm. colors, and then complicated storylines is also one of the tropes of giallo.
Yeah, dude, it's a lot of good things about this, but all in all, I thought the editing and with the music, it was just a little bit too much. But at the end of it, I can see why people do enjoy this. I believe it or not, I didn't hate the film, but that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. Jimmy, how about you?
Well, I'm the giallo fan. So
I grew up
like not liking this stuff. And I saw a couple. I'm like, this is terrible. The dialogue's stilted. This is terrible. It looks goofy, blah, blah, blah. And then I started watching more and I'm like, well, Jesus, this is stylistic. The way they shoot it, the camera movements, the music is so woo big and blah, you know, that 70s music. I like this one a lot. I think the kills are kind of brutal. They're not that many. It's not super bloody compared to some of them, but like, yeah, there's some really cool stuff in here. You know what, Mark, you're not wrong about the acting. It does come across as it's almost kind of hyper stylized. Like everything feels just, and I don't think these movies are made for the realism in any way, shape or form. That's why you see Brian De Palma, you know, did his own kind of giallo mm-hmm. with Dress to Kill and stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
Which was also kind of Angie Dickinson's like, oh, you know, these over emotional, over dramatic sequences. But I think I love the style. I like watching it. I like it. And I appreciate you saying that, Mark, that, you know, yeah, there is something that kind of you get used to it and you enjoy it. And this is one of my favorite ones. It's not my favorite, but it's definitely up there. I like the simplicity of some of the kills, I think, but they're brutal. They're just mean spirited.
Yeah,
I like the style of it.
The corner, sorry to interrupt, but yeah, that one scene where his head's you know, on the corner of everything. I'm like, stop. That's the worst.
Not just his head, his mouth. His mouth. Oh, you're just ow. Yeah. God, I hope he has a good dentist. I think it's a really, I really like this film, and I'm glad you suggested it. But Matt, I actually absolutely get what you're saying. I think if, you know, maybe I'll find one that I'll recommend to you that I can think that you might like, but I get it. I get why these don't work for everybody. I don't think they're for everybody.
You should definitely check out Knife Plus Heart. That came out a couple years ago. It's on Shudder.
Seen it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. Okay, I like that. I like that.
Yeah, of course. That was good, yeah.
Okay, so then we're moving on to our next movie, and that is from 2008, and that is The Children. You brought them into this world, now they will take you out, is the tagline. A relaxing Christmas vacation, very simple premise, a relaxing Christmas vacation turns into a terrifying fight for survival as the children of these families who are getting together for Christmas, they begin to turn on their parents for kind of mysterious reasons. And this one gets pretty brutal. There's some uncomfortable moments in it and some kind of disturbing scenes, I thought. But I really liked this one. I thought it was pretty mean-spirited, a good anti-Christmas movie. I thought that the kids were creepy as all hell, and the parents were, you know, I thought everybody was good. The teenage girl was good. I thought it was a good, like, tight little thriller, and definitely one that is pretty brutal. I think you could see them. I thought some of the editing was a bit choppy. But you could sort of see them, I think, trying to utilize the children as appropriately as they could, you know, and so you could sort of see them trying to avoid having the kids, you know, really killing them. and so I think some of it was, you know, cut out in the editing, and some of it was, you know, because when you're working with kids, you got to, I think most, what is it, Kubrick, when he was doing The Shining, that boy didn't know that they were making a horror movie. You know, Kubrick was very protective of the kid who played Danny. And so I, you know, it's hard to do one of these. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of Pet Sematary. That was one where they actually had the kid really like making faces and holding knives and stuff like that. And this one wasn't quite like that, but I thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed this one. It was, I thought, a pretty creepy little movie. Why don't we start with Jimmy this time? What did you think?
Yeah, I was surprised by this one. I didn't expect much because I feel like the killer children movie is usually not a very good subgenre in horror. I feel like it's always right. Overly cheesy or
coming from the guy who picked it.
I know, but like, and I pick good ones, especially that one that Mark.
Yeah,
liked.
No, but I this is yeah, a, what? For a killer kid movie. This is probably one of my favorite killer kid movies.
It's one of the better ones. Sure. They're very scary. Yeah, they're very scary. It's unsettling. It's I you know, it's funny, Matt, when you were saying about the editing, for a minute there, like there'd be moments I was like, oh, that's really good. And then they'd be like, wait, slow down, guys. Hold on.
Yeah.
But I love that. I love the kills were creepy. It was unsettling. It was good. I really enjoyed it. Far better than I expected on this one, to be honest, because I my expectations were low.
Mm. Joe.
I think this movie should be required viewing in all junior highs as a form of contraception. You know, if this doesn't make you not want to have kids, I don't know what will. Yeah. This was extremely difficult for me to watch. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I loved it, but it's just having raised kids and over the years becoming the curmudgeon of my dreams, I'm growingly more intolerant of other people's kids.
Yes.
And this movie just built so much anxiety and aggravation in me watching it. Those absent parenting style thing that those parents, they got everything they deserved. I will say that. One of my favorite lines is by the teenage girl towards the beginning. She said, "I'm so sad I could fart." That's an actual quote from the movie. But the boy at the beginning banging his fingers on that xylophone repeatedly, I just wanted to throw something through the TV. And then when they got to that dinner table scene and all those kids just start moaning and whining into this crescendo, I would have just flipped the table over and totally lost my shit. This movie is excellent. I'm so glad I've seen this now because... Yeah, like I said, if somebody's thinking about starting a family, watch this first. If you can get through it, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Mark, what did you think?
I absolutely loved this film. It was great. Joe wanted to flip the table when they're at the dinner table. I wanted to break my TV screen at the very beginning when they're getting out of the car and these kids kept screaming and screaming. Because I'm in the same boat now that I've raised a kid and, you know, and I'm an empty nester and I'm just looking at the parenting of, it's like, we don't hit kids. We don't spank kids. I'm just like, yes, you do. Absolutely. Yeah. You do.
Yeah.
And yeah, they got exactly what they deserved. Are with the editing that everyone's talking about, is that the part when the mom's in the tent with her husband and it was going from scene to scene back and forth a little bit too fast? Yeah, I agree with that, but I'll tell you something, this film had me not blocking the screen with my feet. I was up behind the couch pacing back and forth going, you idiot, don't stop, hit the children, and I'm going, kill the kid right now. And I live in a condo, and I have neighbors, and I must sound like an absolute maniac.
Oh, good God.
I must sound like a maniac going, kill the kid.
His neighbor thinks it's Jeffrey Dahmer living next to him.
Oh, my gosh, because I was yelling it. I was going, kill the kid. Hit the kid. When the mom's up on the stairs, you got the two kids there, and she's got the fire poker, I'm going, you could hit him. You could stab him. Do something. It's like, whack him.
I would like to say, as a disclaimer, for our listeners before they think Mark's going to just start hauling off and killing kids. These kids were possessed and
yes.
it would have been done in self-defense.
Yes. So. Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was.
Mark leaves out a little bit. You can.
Oh, I forgot to mention that part.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the ending to this film because I was thinking, is this happening everywhere? And then they reveal it and I'm like, oh, is that? And like when the daughter gets out to check the car and to move on, I'm going, she better have locked those doors, because I'm going, the one kid's out there. It's, she's going to go in there and I'm screaming, you better lock the door. You better lock the door, screaming. And this film was such a blast, and I picked Snoop Dogg Hood of Horror, and here's Matt with the children. I'm just going, I'm starting to understand the frustration. Because
we loved Hood of Horror.
I know, but I'm telling you right now, guys, the children, I had a blast with this. I was on my feet pacing. This was so fun, and this is why I enjoyed doing this podcast, because of the children and some other picks that Matt have done. This was fun. This film is fun. I highly recommend it.
It's great when it actually evokes an emotional response.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where it
yeah,
triggers totally. You to get up off the couch and pace and yes. do something and wring your hands. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was great. Well, I mean, you guys had an emotional response from Hood of Horror, just the wrong one.
Well, we did. We did.
Definitely. I was affected by it.
Kind of like a expired egg salad response.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Love egg salad.
Or sour milk, something like yeah, that. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, that was a good one. And the next one that I picked is one that I had not seen either, although I had seen it before the last episode, but that was just because I got caught up watching it, but I hadn't seen it before. And that is Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale. And this is a Finnish film, and I hope you all finished it.
I thought of that joke the whole time I was watching this movie.
Beautiful, beautiful.
I don't get it.
He knows if you've been naughty, he knows if you've been nice, and he doesn't give a shit. That's the tagline for this movie. Young Pietari lives with his reindeer herding father in Arctic Finland. On the eve of Christmas, a nearby excavation makes a frightening discovery. And an evil Santa Claus is unleashed. And it's really more of a Krampus tale, really, at its heart, because what they find is not Santa, it's Krampus, but they're calling him Santa. Mm. So there must be some kind of cultural thing between what Santa and Krampus are. But I really enjoyed this one. Like this was one that I was sorry. I was looking up films, because I wasn't sure if this pick would work if I couldn't find Christmas horror films, you know, that I hadn't seen. I wanted some that I hadn't seen before. And so this was one that while I was trying to decide my picks, I just decided to watch a little bit of to see if it was looked like it was going to be any good. And I got so caught up watching it that I just finished it. And so I really enjoyed it. This came out in 2010. Directed by Jalmari Helander, and I thought the cast was great. I liked the Santa's elves are not at all what you expect them to be, and or Krampus's elves, but they keep calling him Santa, so I guess they're Santa's elves, and they're not at all what you picture in the stories at all. They're a bunch of naked old men running around in groups, and I loved it. I thought the image of those naked old guys running through the snow, chasing the helicopter and everything was fantastic. Absolutely creepy as could be.
You heard it here first. Matt likes
I would have
naked
loved
old
it.
Men in the snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put that in the bumper.
I would have. Yeah. Yep. I'm sure Mark's got plenty already. About hitting kids, killing kids. I'm sure there's plenty on there. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed it. The only thing that I wish that would have put it way over the top for me is if that Krampus guy had actually come out and they had to battle him some other way. But you know, I thought that the boy was great, and I liked the whole, I loved that whole scene where they had the elf in that meat room or whatever, and they had him chained up, and he's, I thought that was really creepy, and the way he was looking at the kid and everything, and I thought it was a great movie. So I really enjoyed it. I thought some of the stuff was a little goofy, like that, you know, them stealing all the heaters and ovens and stuff like that, like that's gonna melt the guy. But you know, it's a, I think it's part a kid's movie, although I'm not sure if it's probably one I would show to a little kid, but it had some kid elements to it, you know. Mark, start us off. What did you think of this one?
Yeah, this wasn't one of my favorites. I mean, it was an interesting concept. I enjoyed it. I love that kid. He's a weird looking kid. It's like, I don't know what it was about him, but I mean, he
reminded me of the boy from Mark and his kids again. but he reminded me of the boy from Let the Right One In, the original.
Oh yeah, yeah. He kind of looks like maybe a Keanu Reeves when he was like a boy or something. But no, I mean, I loved how he was all like in his like little body armor, kind of like, you know, football pads and whatnot. Kid was a pretty good actor too. I didn't mind his acting at all. Yeah, just all the way through it, I didn't know where it was going. And at the end, it was creepy to see, like, you know, 400, 500 gray, naked looking skinny Santa Claus is like moving in a horde, you know, through the mountains. That was neat. But through it all, I mean, there wasn't really much blood. I would say this would be a good starting off film for kids to watch for like a horror movie Christmas kind of thing, but it's going to ruin Santa's image, I guess. But it was okay. It was okay. It definitely wasn't my favorite out of all the picks.
Joe, what did you think?
I think I'm confused, because up until you were talking about it, I thought that was supposed to be their folklore version of Santa, not Krampus.
Yeah, might be.
And I mean, that's my number one note is, wow, that's a really interesting take on Santa.
Yeah.
You know, we've grown up to think of him as the Coca-Cola version of Santa. And here these people are, you know, we know about Krampus, but Santa to us has always been, you know, Father Christmas, the good guy, the jolly guy. I was thinking, oh, wow, that is a neat idea. Is what if Santa to somebody else is just terrible?
Yeah.
But that being said, yeah, this movie, I agree, had just enough naked guys running around in the snow.
The just creature, enough.
Just enough. Not too much, just enough. One more would have pushed it over.
Yeah.
The kid was a phenomenal actor. I'll give him that.
Yeah, it's good.
The creature design was awesome. It was massive. I loved it.
Cool.
And most importantly, I love the little homage at the end to the ending of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
So no, it's a good film.
Yeah. Jimmy.
Yeah. I honestly saw this when it first came out. I think I reviewed it or at some point. I really liked it. I liked it because it worked as not only a slight horror film, kind of scary. It was a little creepy enough, but it really is more of a fantasy. And I think it's
right. Yeah.
I liked that, seeing that other side of Christmas. I liked the kid is great. Fantastic. And I agree with Joe. One more naked guy maybe would have been too much. It would have just been overkill. Mm-hmm. But it's short. Thank you. Love that. Mm-hmm. Love short movies. Make more of them. I just thought it was fun. It was clever. It's not my favorite. It's not like I think twice is enough for a while. I don't need to go back again. But it's one I enjoy, and it's got some heart. It's got some weirdness. It's fun. It's an interesting little movie.
Yeah, I'll probably revisit this at some point, but I enjoyed it. Yeah. Okay. The next one I picked was 2015's Krampus. And of course, this is a horror comedy based on the ancient legend about a pagan creature who punishes children on Christmas. This one, you know, I just picked this one to have one because I like to watch this every couple of years. It's been a couple of years since I've watched it. So I just threw this one in there. It could have been any number of movies that I've seen before. Almost was Black Christmas, but I like this one. I think it's a great, great little film. It's definitely got a mean side to it. But it's got a almost Spielbergian side to it as well. I love the, and also sort almost a Tim Burton feel to it, you know, which Michael Dougherty has. He definitely goes for the look of his films. He always has a pretty interesting artistic aesthetic. You could definitely see it in Trick or Treat, but also in this one as well. So I really liked it, as always. And it's, you know, it's just a fun movie. I don't know, you know, how much we need to spend on it, but I thought it was really good. Joe.
I absolutely love this film. I own it. I've watched it, I don't know, a dozen times. The cast is phenomenal. You've got Adam Scott, Toni Collette, David Koechner, Alison Tolman. The creepy snowman in the front yard is like, from that point on, that's where I see it.
Yeah.
Hooked. And like this mysterious, creepy looking snowman has just appeared in our front yard.
Yeah.
I love the idea of this house just sort of getting closed off from society entirely, as if they're in their own snow globe.
Yep.
And the fit hits the shan. And and the opening scene at that shopping mall in New Zealand is just fantastic. Yeah. I must tip my hat to, I believe it's Weta Digital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're Weta. The ones Weta. Okay, they're the ones responsible for the animation flashback sequences in it, which again I had to look up only because it looked very. Actually, it was done incredibly well. The first couple frames I thought was stop motion. But very smooth, very well done. And it does look very much like a Tim Burton type of animation style. My only criticism is some of the other character designs in this film, I wish were a little scarier, like the gingerbread man and the Jack in the Box. The Jack in the Box is probably,
I like better. The Jack in the Box. Yeah, I think that the guy jaws creepy.
That came out of him, but the
mask too is just so creepy.
Yeah. The gingerbread man, just, I mean, I know the gingerbread man, what are you going to do with them? They seemed a little cartoony to me compared to Krampus, which character design is fantastic. Just the fact that he's got those dead eyes and that mouth that just hangs open and does not move. It's just so creepy. I'm all out of praise for this. I just, that's all I got. That's all my notes.
Yeah. Love and it. I love like everybody stuck in a house kind of thing with this, you know, that whole trope. I love that.
Yeah.
Mark.
Yeah. This is the second time I've seen it. I saw it a couple years ago and I love this film. All in all, it's a cautionary tale that I think every family goes through. I don't know what family doesn't hate the holidays. it's a pain in the ass. But it's a cautionary tale, and you know, he makes a wish and the wish turns into a nightmare. Special effects. I love the gingerbread guys. It's one of my favorite scenes is in the kitchen with the nail gun. It's fantastic. All the way through this film, I just think it's great. Toni Collette's great. Her sister in the film, she's season 3 of Fargo, she's wonderful. But I love how the family all like kind of like crawls around like the with the wagons, and they actually start getting along and they start becoming a family. Like a real family that actually starts caring for each other. And that's what happens at the end of the film, where the young boy says, you know, I want my family, when at the beginning, you know, he didn't. And then there's a mean little twist at the end that just going, oh, that really sucks, but I love it. I love that it happens, mm-hmm. and it happens to a lot of other people, and it would happen to my family too. But yeah, it's a great film.
And it has an Indiana Jones ending as well. The Raiders Lost Ark ending as well.
True. Yeah, that, yeah, it does.
Sure.
Sure. But yeah, it's a great film. I loved the brother-in-law, the bald guy. He's been in so much. Mm-hmm. He was
David Koechner.
Yes, yeah. He's wonderful in it. And like you really start hating him at the beginning of the film, but man, do you love him at the end. He just comes through and through and through. And you know, with the shotgun that he pulls out of his Hummer, and he just brings it up, and you know, oh, this gun's heavy, Adam Scott says, and he's going, yeah, it's my wife's. It's great, I love it. Yeah. And yeah, it's a great film. It's a I think after watching it this year now for this show, I think I might watch this every year. This could be my not replace It's a Wonderful Life, but it's getting up there. It's great. That and Die Hard. It's a fantastic film.
Yeah. Jimmy.
Again, reviewed this one, came out and watched it again. It's I like it. I don't love it as much as you guys. I think very good. I gave it a solid 8, but my love for it has worn down. I really, it's one that I think tries very hard to be a scary movie, and it's really not that scary. It's more, I feel like it's more like a Gremlins, you know, tribute, yes. more than anything, a homage to that, yeah. which is fun. Yeah. I mean, it's a fun movie. I enjoy every minute of it. I enjoy Toni Collette. I enjoy Adam Scott. This cast is great, and Koechner is always good. It's just there was something I think it was a slight bit too goofy for me that I think I would have liked it a little darker. You know, I don't know. I just it didn't Doherty's films, Trick or Treat's the same way, as I like them a lot. They're really good movies, but I'm not on the oh my god, I love them so much, which a lot of horror fans really are, both of these films. And I enjoy them because he's always good with finding a good cast. He finds solid actors. It's usually a pretty interesting script, and they're fun flicks, and I that's ultimately what it was. It's not on my Christmas list every year, but I appreciate it for what it is.
Was this a box office like a success, Krampus, or no?
I think so. I think it did okay.
I wish I saw this in the movie theater.
I don't think it was a huge box office blockbuster, but I thought it. I think it did well. Yeah. I went to see it. We took our kid and one of our one of his friends to it. When it came out,
it was funny when I looked up Krampus. On Amazon, and then I knew it was on Peacock, but I forgot, and I thought it was on Amazon. So I went on Amazon, and I saw so many Krampus movies. There's Krampus Origins, Krampus Reckoning,
yeah, there's a lot.
Mother Krampus, Sister Krampus, Krampus the Christmas Devil, Krampus versus Bigfoot, Mother Krampus 2, Krampus the Return. I mean, whoa. Holy shit.
There was also Krampus Hood of Horror.
Oh, good. That one was so good.
Yeah.
You fucking asshole. Matt,
to answer your question, the budget was $15 million. Opening weekend made $16.2 million. Gross U.S. $42 million. Worldwide gross $61 million. So
wow, not did great. Okay. But okay. Made its money back, but made its not money great. Back. Yeah.
$15 million, huh? Yeah. It seems like it would be a lot higher than that, man. The production value seemed pretty good, man.
Yeah.
Damn. They used every cent.
I mean, he knows how to make a movie that looks good, because Trick or Treat didn't have a huge budget, and it looked fantastic. So
yeah, I agreed. He can do that.
Okay, so the next movie that I picked is from 2020, and that is The Wolf of Snow Hollow, directed by Jim Cummings and starring Jim Cummings. It is a stressed out police officer struggles not to give in to the paranoia that grips his small mountain town as bodies turn up after each full moon. And this is sort of a werewolf movie, I guess. And I won't, I don't know if we're giving spoilers away or not, but it's a good, I thought, just a quirky little kind of mystery. There's a little bit of, I feel like there's a little Silence of the Lambs, but
absolutely,
but it's also, it's very tongue in cheek. It's got a kind of a quirky sense of humor. Robert Forster, I think, is just absolutely amazing in this and absolutely hysterical in it. And as a cop or as a sheriff who is probably at a point where he should be retired now, he's got health issues, he's kind of letting things slip, and his son really is acting as the de facto sheriff for most of the time, and people take their orders from him, at least until the end. And but it also has Ricky Lindholm in it, who I thought was really good in this, and a pretty good cast. I just think it's a really solid movie, and I think I love like how the Jim Cummings, his character will just slap somebody and he gets mad at them, and there's almost a slap. It doesn't quite go into slapstick, but it's almost, there's definitely a lot of physical humor in it. When he goes over to the boyfriend's house and he's got like, and it looked like a curtain on his face or something, and runs into beat him up or whatever. It's absolutely hilarious. And I thought it's got some pretty tense moments too. It's a good combination of horror comedy and straight horror, I thought. Even though it's not, you know, maybe it doesn't have a lot of, there's not like brutal kills or anything, but it's not that kind of movie. So, but what did you guys think? Jimmy, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, I what I like about Jim Cummings is that he tends to take an already familiar genre or idea and add his own kind of quirky nature to it. It's not, you know, it in this movie is, I like the mystery. I like the energy. I like his performance. I like Ricky. I love Robert Forster and everything. Yeah, I like this. I like the energy. It's a moody piece too. Like you can kind of, this is one of those, like,
yeah,
you feel cold watching it. You're like, okay, I'm freezing. I think it's a very well made, because there's a couple of werewolf movies that came out around that time. Werewolves Within was the other one, which is excellent too. I really like this one. I wish there had been a little more horror. For mine, that would like that a little more werewolfy, but I like the werewolf tropes that they play with. I like what they do with this. It's a good movie. It's an interesting movie, and Jim does a lot. So he's writing this, he's acting in it, producing it, directing it. So considering all that, yeah, he's pretty good at this.
Yeah, Mark, what did you think?
I had no idea who Jim Cummings was until this film. New to the ball game. I love this film. I love it. The slapstick in it, with him dealing with alcoholism and how he deals with his when he falls off the wagon and he comes back into his meeting, and they're like, no, you need to, you know, work on this stuff. He's going, fuck you, you know, like, I created this.
And yeah,
just great. Yeah, and when he has like emotional outbursts and he just starts swinging away, it's so funny. So funny. I was worried at the beginning with of this film, I'm like, wait, what am I watching here? Because it, you know, it, with the fiance and you know, the fiance and her other fiance, that I was like, what is this? It's like, it looks kind of weird. After a little bit of that, it just goes. I'm just like, oh my gosh, when you get with Jim Cummings, I think the dialogue is great in this. I think
definitely.
Yeah. And you can tell Jim wrote this because he was nailing every single sentence with such great, a little bit of Fargo, Tarantino kind of thing happening.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I mean, it was definitely, he was definitely influenced, and he knew what was happening at the end when it seems like a Silence of the Lamb moment. He knew, and he went all in, and it was hysterical. It was funny and scary at the same time, I thought, because you know, you're so invested in Jim's character. And
right.
And it was just great. And when he's on the floor, he's bleeding, and what a great reaction when he's crawling on the floor and there's blood coming out of his mouth. It was just so funny. I was enjoying. I was grinning ear to ear with this. Fantastic film. Fantastic. Mm. And Robert's great in it. And this was his last film. And he did great. He did great. A great pick for Robert.
You could tell his health wasn't so great. I think a lot of those scenes where they were helping him walk
up and all that.
I don't think that was just a character choice. I think that might have really been Robert Forster, because he was getting pretty sick by the time this.
Did he? Now here's the question: did Robert pass away during this film and they couldn't finish?
No,
it was afterwards. Because
no, it was after.
Okay, so well, then still that was still I thought a great director's choice with Jim when he comes in and after he breaks and enters into his daughter's boyfriend's house with the white sheet around his mask, and he comes in, he's going, "Hi, honey," with the pepper spray. And his dad's missing. He's going, "Dad, your dad." And he looked, and he's just not there anymore. I'm just like, oh, that was so touching.
Well, I loved it when he goes into his daughter's boyfriend's place to beat him up. Yeah. And then the mom comes in, sprays them both with pepper spray. And then when she sees who it is,
he's like, "What did you do?"
You know, she looks at her son and says, "What did you do?" and smacks him. It was hilarious.
And the milk. Yeah. And it, God, what a great just acting with Jim when he with the milk and just the it seemed like they actually pepper sprayed him. I don't know who this Jim Cummings guy is, but let me know after the show, or if you want to now, what else has he done? Or I'll do the research because I want to see more of what he's done.
I'll tell you something after the show, guys, about it. Yeah, I've interviewed him. He's got a lot of talent.
He's in Halloween Kills, but he had a movie called Thunder Road.
Who is he in?
Just did the one about
who is he in?
He was the cop. The cop that gets killed in the beginning.
Yeah, he was. Oh. He was one of the guys searching. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then he's in he plays a cop in Thunder Road.
I want to tell you, he did a movie recently called, oh my gosh, I'm going to look it up really quick because it's a pretty good flick called The Beta Test. That was kind of interesting about a kind of a thriller about it. It might work well with Mark's fantasy erotic thrillers. So there you go about that.
Yeah. Joe, what did you think of this one?
Jimmy, I got to point out Ricky Lindholm. She's the other half of Garfunkel and Oates. Were you?
Oh, oh wow.
Were you not aware of that?
Oh my good God. Yeah. I'm so excited. That's two in a row. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I didn't know who they were. I'm so excited now.
So anyway, I know there's a werewolf, is the villain in this, but I think we would all agree that the real villain in this film is alcoholism. I thought it was a hilarious film. I thought Jim Cummings was fantastic. All the slapstick, like when I watched this movie, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I didn't even realize this was a comedy. But then when the slapstick started happening, it started to remind me of like a Super Troopers.
If
they were to do a horror film.
I've never seen that.
Great. Do yourself a favor. It's worth it. I thought the actual wolf was cool design. I thought it was amazingly done. Mm-hmm. This would have been my favorite werewolf movie had what happened not happened at the end without giving anything away. It's a small town that's getting terrorized by some sort of killer, which everybody seems to think is this werewolf, but that's not what the film is about. This film is about
Right.
The stress of this sheriff, you know, his dad's health is going bad and he's freaking out and he's divorced. He's got a real bitch for an ex-wife and he's trying to take care of his daughter and made felt guilty all the time by his ex-wife.
And he's a bit of a screw up. He's a bit of, you know, he's not really, he's not somebody who's equipped to handle all of that. Right. And he's got to, you know, so it's a really interesting.
But he's really intelligent though. I mean, I don't think he's not, maybe not equipped.
No, I meant he's not emotionally equipped to handle it all. Like, you know what I mean? And so he's not, he doesn't have the, I mean, he might be, he's bright and he's definitely, as a cop, he was right all along about everything.
Yeah.
And he has good instincts as a cop, but in terms of being able to juggle all of the emotional issues of his life, he can't.
Yeah.
No,
but he has to.
And especially, you know, delegating power and ruling, or, you know, like, being a manager to the other.
Yeah, he shouldn't be in charge.
No,
yeah.
No, not which, at all. In the end, have zero authority.
Well, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And in the end, they make the right choice.
Right. You know, oh,
they
make for the right sure. Yeah. But I had a problem with him firing people. Like, he fired the coroner. Like, does he have the, like it's like,
the
you're
authority,
fired.
No.
It's like, no, you
no,
don't have the authority
not.
To do that. But it was funny.
Official, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of wondered if they really were fired.
Small town.
That's just something he says. You know. Yeah.
But yeah, this was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one. I'm glad you guys liked it because it was one of my favorites from 2020. And
that's fun.
Which brings me to another one of my favorites from 2020. These were both in my top 10 that year. And that is Anything for Jackson, which is not technically overtly set at Christmas, although it could be. But like I said last time, the director has done about 30 Hallmark Hallmark Christmas movies in his as a director, and so he was dying to do a horror movie, and he wanted to do an anti-Christmas movie, or not anti-Christmas movie, but an anti-Christmas movie Christmas movie, and so that's what his idea for this was, and I think this is just a fantastic film. I think it's kind of scary in parts. I think it's got a great cast. Julian Richings, I just think he's a great actor. He has been in a whole bunch of stuff he's one of those actors who's kind of a chameleon. You don't realize you've seen him in so many different things. He's in Graveyard Rats, by the way, from that
Cabinet of Curiosities.
But he's been in a lot of things, and but I really like him. I like the woman. This is about, let me read the blurb. A bereaved Satanist couple kidnap a pregnant woman so they can use an ancient spell book to put their dead grandson's spirit into her unborn child. But they end up summoning more than they bargained for. And this one has got just a really good cast. The girl that they kidnap, I thought, is great. I thought Josh Crudus as the kind of the Satanist expert who lives in his mom's basement is just so creepy.
Fucking good. Almost,
you know, he reminded me of the main, I can't remember his name now, but the red haired guy from Children of the Corn, but like grown up, you know.
He the actor from The Mist? The clerk boy that gets dragged underneath the garage door.
He's not on the
him.
Or at least it doesn't show it on his
looks like that
bio.
Actor.
But
sorry.
But so this is I thought that I love the whole, they have this plan and it starts to go awry because they didn't realize when they opened the door for their grandson to come in, that also opened the door for other spirits to come into their home. And there was one very creepy ghost in particular that kind of bends over backwards when the first time I saw it and it rose up from on the side of the bed, it truly creeped me out. But and then there's also some kind of Fargo feeling to it as well. I don't know if it was just the snow, but the guy who comes in and snow blows their
Rory
Rory.
He comes and snowblows their driveway or whatever, and what happens with him was very unexpected. And this time I had forgotten what he did, and then this time I was like, oh my god, that's right.
Can't we say it?
Yeah. He sticks his head in a snowblower.
This is one of my notes. Is like, oh, I love it when Rory sticks his head in the snowblower. Oh
yeah,
over and over again.
Yeah,
everything
crazy
over and over again.
So, yeah. Mark, lead us off. What did you think of this one?
This was my favorite out of all the picks. What a surprise! This is from Shudder, and I love this film so much. So many creepy moments. Just at the beginning, where it's just one shot. At the very beginning, it's just a one shot thing, and you see this elderly couple. She's cooking breakfast. He comes down talking about the hemming with his shirt, and they're just so adorable. And you're like, I want a wife like that and be old and have that, you know, for my life. And they go outside and you think it, you know, their daughter's coming in and, you know, or a family. And then it's a kidnapping scene, and they go up in this little elevator. I was like, wow, they have an elevator. They explain it later, but he goes up and I was just like, okay, this already has a little twist to it. Great acting all the way through it. The grandpa, I forgot the name. What's the name, Matt?
You mean the actor's name?
Yeah, that character actor, where you've seen him like everywhere. He's so great in it.
Julian Richings.
Yeah, good and so charismatic for some reason, I thought. And the grandma was absolutely fantastic. And they're so polite. When they have the pregnant woman in the bed, and they're so polite, you know, she has a note written out. She's like, we're not here to harm you or the baby. You know, it's just, and they have flashback scenes, and those scenes are great. And yes, with the satanic redhead with the worst comb over ever, he's so amazing.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
He's so great in it. And you didn't really think about him much at the beginning, but man, does he deliver at the end. And it's so fun to watch. And just with the scene with the cop, with the detective, and when it happens, I jumped. And then when it happens down the road,
over and over,
I'm jumping. And how, dude, it's a great scene where they put salt, you know, and then he puts the blood down, and then in the background they don't pan into, you know, the ghost, but you see her ghost in the background stops, then slowly turns around, just walks away.
They don't mention it.
I'm just like, this is fantastic. This is so great.
Yeah.
What a well done movie, and just in the end's satisfying. And I don't know if we can talk about the end, because I have a question maybe after the show, because I don't want to ruin it, because this is another show that I'm telling you, Matt just slam dunked it out, you know, just hit the ball out of the park. I love this film. This film was so much fun to watch. So good. Thank you, Matt.
Oh, good. I'm glad you liked it, because this is one of my favorites. And I know I've mentioned it a few times, in Wolf of Snow Hollow. Both of those were movies that I was just dying to get you guys to watch. So it just worked out that it worked out. They both worked out on the theme.
Yeah,
so,
holy shit.
Joe, what did you think?
One of my top notes is they are such a cute couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right from the get-go, that you're just entranced. That we didn't give any props to the wife. She is Sheila McCarthy. Mm-hmm. You guys would probably know her as the nosy reporter Samantha Cole in Die Hard 2.
No, is that her?
She's It was driving me nuts. I'm like, who is this woman? I know her. I've seen that face.
Oh my god.
She's got a very distinct
that
look, and so
her.
I had to look it up. I'm like, oh my god, that's Samantha Cole.
Mark's about to have an orgasm.
That is awesome. Oh my god.
I love the part where she goes up after they've abducted the pregnant lady, and she's like trying to steal her phone or look through her phone, and she's reading through the notes, and there was a message that said DTF, and I love her line. It says, DTF, if you can't say it out loud, you shouldn't be doing it. And then just moves on to something else. It's just adorable. The ghosts in this film were creepy as all get out. My, yeah. I, you know, we talked about Rory. We talked about
the cat. Oh, yeah. The kissing.
But my favorite, hands down, was the flosser.
Oh,
the woman that is flossing her teeth, and her teeth are just getting so plucked creepy. Out of her
with
head.
The teeth dropping on the ground. I mean, yes. That was, yeah, that, I mean, talk about.
I liked the little ghost too, though. I thought the little ghost was really cool.
Yeah. Well, I was reading, there's supposed to be 5 hidden ghosts in this. So what you were talking about, Mark, really? Earlier with the, most people have only seen 2, but there's rumored to be a total of 5 hidden. It's kind of like in Fight Club with the one scene splice thing. So, but yeah, it's
well, like hanging out in the background or something.
Yeah,
or?
I you saw will not one. Notice it.
I saw one in the mirror.
That was one.
I saw one in the mirror, and I saw one in the side. I believe it was in a corner or something I saw. So, but yeah, man, from Die Hard 2. Yeah, holy creepy. Shit. We are old, guys.
At 52 minutes, there's a ghost in a white hospital gown, nightgown in a doorway as Audrey walks up the stairs. With the white pot, the ghost is in a room behind her. It stands out from behind the door. I'm sorry. Wow, the director wanted to hide 3 hidden ghosts in the scene. As of yet, none have been found and pointed out. So maybe 2 out of 3 have been found. So
I saw the one in the mirror.
Worth a rewatch to look for.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, I'm definitely watching this film again, regardless. And this is another reason why people should get Shudder. And it's so cheap, and to get this film,
right.
Man, holy crap, so good, so good.
Jimmy, what do you think?
It's nice to see a possession, exorcism, ghostly movie that takes a few chances. And this is, look, you have the lead couple. They're not the young hot couple. They're, you know, Sheila McCarthy. They're and it was kind of nice to see something so uniquely thought out. This is a ghost story that kind of creates a really interesting mythology, and by using real, quote unquote real haunting type ideas. But it does so in such a way that it's just like, I love the repeating acts. I love that. It's just there's a sense of dread here. That's really, but again, you're kind of like, I know they're Satanists, but it's not like they're bad people.
You're rooting for them.
You kind of do.
Well, and it, when the police come to question them, and then he makes the mistake and he says, "Oh, I saw her that morning," and he should never have said that, you know. And it makes you like concerned for them, even though they're doing this horrible thing and making terrible choices.
They're just so adorable, and just with the interaction, and then with him and the detective in his office, and his assistant, you know, blurts out something, and it's just like over his head. It was such a rookie mistake, and you're like, dang it. And then he's called, and it's just such a great film. Dang it.
I'm thankful for the writers who decided to drop us in where they did in this couple's timeline. They could have started back at their grandson's death. They could have started with the mourning period. They could have started with them going down all these other avenues of what could they do. But no, he fast forwarded all the way to the point where we've established they've lost a grandson. They've tried to figure out anything they possibly could to get him back, or, you know, they've exhausted every possible avenue. And then they went down the road of Satanisms and figured out how to cast the spell or whatever it is. And then we just pick up, you know, present day.
Yeah.
That was wonderful.
I love that scene. When they're with the dead crow, and they just come up, and it's just so cute how they interact by bringing the crow back to life, because they're just amateurs at it. And it was just adorable to watch. You just root for them, and you just want them to have a happy ending at the end. You really do.
Yeah.
You kind of do.
What a great film. You do. You're
rude. Smart. That's smart. Look, that's smart writing. When you can make really, they're horrible people. Let's be real. They're horrible. They kidnap a woman with really horrible intentions. But there's to make them human and to make them interesting characters that you're not just they're evil. They're evil. That's a skill. I like to see that.
Hence the title, Anything for Jackson. It was like, we'll do anything for Jackson. And man, fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is my pick for this week. And hopefully, if you guys have not gone out to watch any of these, hopefully you check them out. You can, I will just say that Deep Red is on Shudder. The Children is on Tubi, which is free. Rare Exports is on Hulu, Hoopla, Canopy. I think it's on Tubi as well. Krampus is on Peacock. Wolf of Snow Hollow is on Amazon Prime, and Anything for Jackson is on Shudder. So, and the next pick is, well, in two picks, we'll be doing our top 10 of the year, but next pick is Joe's pick. And so, Joe, what should we be watching?
The last official
pick of 2022. Joe's going to wrap us up like a national treasure.
I picked body horror.
Oh.
Totally out of left field.
Nice.
Wow. I'm impressed.
It really started because I saw that Crimes of the Future is on Hulu.
Ooh.
And I wanted to watch it. And I haven't gotten around to it yet. So I figured, start with that. So our first item is going to be Crimes of the Future. Don't worry, you guys are going to hate me by the time this is all done. So that's number one. The next one we're going to watch is Tusk by Kevin Smith.
Oh,
love it.
Beautiful.
Which is on HBO Max and Canopy.
It's a good one.
Nice.
the next one we're going to watch is, of course, The Human Centipede.
Yes.
This is on AMC Plus if you have it. If not, it will have to be a rental. After that, our next one is going to be Eraserhead.
Never seen it.
Perfect.
Good.
Which is on HBO Max as well. After that, one I've never even heard of or seen is called Body Melt from 1994, which is on Tubi. I did have, for full disclosure, I had Cabin Fever on this list, but I didn't want you guys to have to rent two, so I pulled an audible, and our last movie is going to be Reanimator from 1985, which is on Tubi.
Oh,
fuck. Beautiful. Yeah,
brilliant. Yeah.
When is this episode coming out?
In two weeks.
Like during Christmas, we're going to be talking about Christmas human, week. Yep. Human centipede.
The day before, like 2 days before Christmas. Christmas Eve.
You're welcome. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Joe, you Santa.
Yeah. That's my Krampus Christmas gift to everyone. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. The next episode will be dropping on Christmas Eve, the 23rd.
Human centipede.
We'll be watching The Human Centipede over break. Oh my God, Joe, you're a nightmare.
Yeah, the 23rd.
Hey guys, the Human Centipede is a Christmas movie.
Yeah. It's our Christmas Eve special.
Oh man.
All right. Yeah. Well, that one is going to be something to behold. And Joe's picks again, he will post them, or Mark will post them on Facebook. And we'll get them out there. So go ahead and go to www.cinescarehorror.com and pick up some merchandise. You may have missed the big Black Friday sale, but this site that we use has sales all the time. So
they make great stocking stuffers.
Yeah, they do.
The
actually.
Shirts, in fact, cell phone cases.
Yeah. Cell phone cases are fantastic. The shirts are great. Everything.
Didn't you guys say that we had like a shower curtain or something? I can't find that.
Yeah, shower curtain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I want to get one. Are you sure it's all not right. a shower bath mat or something? It's not.
There is a bath mat,
I think that was on there, too. Yeah.
There's a shower curtain?
I'll send you a link, Mark.
Thanks. Unless you're calling Joe a liar.
I'm not calling him a liar. I just can't find it. I wanted to buy it.
Controversy.
Controversy. Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. Never mind.
Yeah, right there is the welcome mat, Mark.
Yeah, the shower curtain, Joey. Yeah.
Okay, I'll keep looking.
All right, well, while these guys are sorting that out, I guess we will let you guys go. Please go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and check out my book. It's now actually on Amazon. The paperback is $9.99. Yep, shower curtain right there, Mark.
Yeah. Son of
a bitch. You have to look on the little menu, the drop-down menu.
Oh, no shit.
There it is. Beautiful, eh?
I'll get in the Jaws one.
And it's on sale. Yeah, it's $52.15.
52? Yeah,
perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go to Amazon, get my book. It's only $9.99 for the paperback right now. And cool. So I guess that's it. So we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Night, guys.
Bye. Hit the children, whack them, and I must sound like an absolute maniac.